بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. Sharia rulings pertaining to Hajj based on the verdicts of Ayatollahs Sistani and Khamenei. I'd like to welcome everyone to this new course, which we're starting inshallah with Allah's grace. And one of the purposes behind this course is to make the common lay Muslim be able to understand all the rulings and become independent when going for the Hajj pilgrimage. This Hajj pilgrimage has many different aspects to it. It becomes very complicated sometimes. And year after year, because of the evolution of matters pertaining to Hajj and the land of Mecca, there arises many different rulings. So we see that the books on the rulings of Hajj keeps on, you know, increasing in pages and in length. So inshallah, we're going to go through many important principles. We're going to go through the rulings in a way that, in an orderly way, so that the person from the very beginning knows what he or she has to go through, and even during the journey, step after step, in an orderly manner, we're going to outline all the important issues. And please, to make this more productive for yourselves, whenever you don't understand anything in the slides, please let me know. Ask your questions as much as possible so you can maximally benefit from the course. Although I am assuming that those who are attending the course, they have some very, very, very basic knowledge on Hajj. So I won't be explaining everything from, you know, its core. However, if any questions do arise, I may have to then explain very basic concepts just in case some of you would like me to repeat them. Now, with the coronavirus, what's happening is the offices of the religious authorities are discussing what to do in Hajj if the coronavirus is still a threat. And although it is very likely that Hajj may be postponed this year and there will be no Hajj pilgrimage this year, however, since the Saudi authorities are very keen for this to happen, and many countries, including Iran, are ready to make this happen too, the Maharaj are discussing right now behind closed doors many different issues, how they can facilitate the Hajj pilgrimage in a way that the corona won't threaten the quality of lives of the Muslims. Things like being able to do the tawaf on higher floors when usually you wouldn't be able, you wouldn't be permitted to do such a thing. Or do the sa'i between the two mounts on higher floors, not only in the basement or the ground floor, but you can do the sa'i ritual between Mount Safa and Marwa on higher floors. Or they're discussing whether we should eliminate certain aspects which are not intrinsic or essential to the validity of the Hajj, such as staying overnight in Mina on the 11th and 12th nights of the month of Dhul-Hijjah, the 12th, the final month of the Islamic calendar. And there are many issues like this. Now, these are all secondary rulings that arise potentially if executing the primary rulings of Hajj may endanger the lives of Muslims. Sometimes the actual pilgrimage, the actualization of the pilgrimage, is so important, being one of the important principles of Islam, that they don't want to compromise this principle. But now with the coronavirus, instead of cancelling the Hajj, they're discussing what can we do out of secondary principles so that the pilgrimage stays put and people will go there, but there may be a lot of limitations that we can open up and make facilitate the actual pilgrimage. And there's no result that has come out yet from the offices, but as they do come out, inshallah, I will up to date you as what exactly is happening. But as I say, it's possible that there will be no pilgrimage this year in 2020. Okay, so let's go to slide 2, introduction. So the rituals in Mecca very broadly can be divided into the isolated Umrah, which is the translation for Umrah Mufrada, and the Hajj. Now the Umrah Mufrada ritual may be performed any time during the year, excluding the days of Tashriq, which are the 10th, 11th, 12th and 13th day of the month of Dhul-Hijjah. Other than that, you can do the Umrah Mufrada, which entails 7 different actions, and we'll go through those later, and you can finish them all within 2 or 3 hours. But this ritual, it's not wajib, but it's highly recommended to do, and you can do it any time during the year except for the days that are called the days of Tashriq, which is the 10th, 11th, 12th and 13th day. If you may recall that the 10th day of Dhul-Hijjah is Eid, is the day of Eid, and that's where they slaughter the sheep. And then those days, after slaughtering the sheep and skinning it and taking its meat off and everything, they would hang the meat on so-called rails for the sun to shine upon and dry them out. That's what literally Tashriq means. And so other than those 4 days, you can do the Umrah Mufrada any time throughout the year. It's called isolated Mufrada because it's not associated or connected to any succeeding Hajj ritual compared to the other form of Umrah, which is, and we'll come to that later, it's called Umrah Tamattu, or the appetitive Umrah, and we'll explain that in a minute. The next slide. So, here, that was the Umrah Mufrada. Now, in relation to the Hajj, which is another form of the rituals that one can do in Mecca. So one was the Umrah Mufrada, the other is the Hajj. Now this Hajj itself, it's a two-part ritual. There are 2 parts to it. And this Hajj ritual is to be performed only during specific days of the year. So that's one difference between the Hajj and the Umrah Mufrada. And this ritual of the Hajj comprises 2 parts. There's two sets of rituals one does for the Hajj pilgrimage. One is the appetitive Umrah called Umrah Tamattu. And then there's a succeeding appetitive Hajj, or it's called the Hajj Tamattu. Now, the Umrah Tamattu, so there are 2 parts here in this one Hajj ritual. And the 2 parts, one is the Umrah Tamattu, one is called Hajj Tamattu. But together they form the Hajj ritual. And we said the rituals in Mecca are broadly divided into 2. One is the Umrah Mufrada, that's, you know, the 7 actions to do, and it all becomes completed within 2 or 3 hours. You can do it any time of the year except for those 4 days. But then there's the Hajj pilgrimage. This Hajj pilgrimage you can do only in specific days of the year, which we'll mention as we progress. And there's two parts to the Hajj pilgrimage. One is the Umrah Tamattu, one is the appetitive. The Umrah Tamattu may be executed any time during the 10th, month of the Islamic calendar called Shawwal, the 11th month, Dhul-Qa'dah, and the early days of the 12th month of the Islamic calendar, Dhul-Hijjah. So during these 2 months and 7 or 8 days, here you can do the Umrah Tamattu. You can't do it in any other time. It has to be done during one of, within this 2 and a bit months. Now, the early days of Dhul-Hijjah, you can also do the Umrah Tamattu during those early days, as long as one completes the Umrah Tamattu and executes one's ihram for the Hajj Tamattu, leaving one ample time to reach the plains of Arafat before the canonical noon of the 9th day of Dhul-Hijjah. Because since Hajj Tamattu, which is the second component to the Hajj pilgrimage after the Umrah Tamattu, since it starts on the 9th day of Dhul-Hijjah, you have time to do the Umrah Tamattu any time in Shawwal or Dhul-Qa'dah. But if you want to do it in Dhul-Hijjah, do it in a manner that leaves you time to execute your ihram and make you reach Arafat on the 9th day of Dhul-Hijjah. Because as we'll explain, for the Hajj Tamattu, when you want to execute the ihram here, you execute it in Mecca, then you have to reach Arafat before the canonical noon on the 9th day. If you leave your Umrah Tamattu too late, then it may not allow you to reach Arafat. So you have to, if you decide to do it on during the early days of Dhul-Hijjah, do it in a manner that leaves you ample time to reach Arafat. So that was the Umrah Tamattu. Whereas the Hajj Tamattu ceremony specifically starts on the 9th of Dhul-Hijjah. For example, you become Muhrim, you do the Ihram. Although we haven't explained what doing the Ihram is, you may have some idea, but we'll go into that in detail. Execute the Ihram on the 8th, for example, but the actual Hajj Tamattu ceremony starts on the specific day, on the 9th of Dhul-Hijjah. And this, it starts then, and this Hajj Tamattu ceremony entails a number of rituals. It starts in the land of Arafat, but there are many different rituals to do in different locations. One is Arafat, but there are different locations here that one has to commit oneself to different actions in those different locations. Now, these rituals, which there are a number of them for the Hajj Tamattu, which have to be done in different locations, some of these rituals need to be executed during specific dates, whilst others must be executed at the most before the end of the month of Dhul-Hijjah. And in brackets, I've said, just see later, because there are one or two actions which are not intrinsic or essential or vital for the validity and soundness of the Hajj Tamattu that you can even do after the month of Dhul-Hijjah. Okay, all these will be explained in detail, don't worry right now. But the important, I'm just highlighting some basic differences between the Umrah Mufradah, which is one set of rituals to do in Mecca, and the Hajj Tamattu. The Umrah Tamattu is termed the appetitive Tamattu because one may satiate one's sexual appetite during the interval between this particular Umrah and the Hajj Tamattu. So, after having completed the Umrah Tamattu and any time before actually becoming muhrim for the Hajj Tamattu ceremony, in this interval you can satiate this particular appetite. And that's why they call this Umrah the Umrah Tamattu. They call it, they label it with the Tamattu expression for this reason. The Umrah Mufradah is recommended, whereas the Hajj ritual, which the two-part Hajj ritual, ought to be executed at least once during the duty-bound's life. So this is a must, that it's wajib, it's obligatory, that once in a lifetime you commit yourself to the Hajj ritual, the Hajj pilgrimage, which includes the Umrah Tamattu with the succeeding Hajj Tamattu. Now, it's only obligatory assuming all the required conditions are met, such as being of good health, sufficiently financially able, having a free, open, secure access travel-wise. And some of these will go into more detail as to what they actually entail. Okay, now, slide number 5. Accomplishing the Umrah Mufradah for oneself or for others, being a deputy for others. Now, according to Ayatollah Sistani, only one Umrah Mufradah may be carried out in every Islamic lunar month. Assuming a second wants to be done, you want to do a second Umrah Mufradah in a given lunar month, it can be either for yourself, but if you want to do it for yourself, you have to do it with the intention of Raja, and that is in the hope that it be accepted before Allah. This is so because, according to Ayatollah Sistani, its legislative nature, the legislative nature of a second Umrah Mufradah in a given lunar month, is not substantiated. So if you want to do the second one for yourself, you have to do it with the intention of Raja, meaning that inshallah, I have hope that this be accepted before Allah. You can't do it because it's mustahab, because this mustahab nature of the second Umrah Mufradah for oneself in a given lunar month, it's not substantiated, according to Ayatollah Sistani. So either you can do the second one for yourself, or you can do the second for Umrah Mufradah in a given lunar month for others. And here it's with the intention of ada, meaning, you know, you're actually executing the ritual timely. You're doing it according to Islamic protocol. There's no problem there. It's according to the legislative Sharia. It's a duty that is timely. So, and if you want to do a third one here, the third one you can do for another person or other persons, as will become apparent in a minute. So, here, so these are two ways you can commit yourself to more than one Umrah Mufradah in a given lunar month. Now the reward, it can be distributed to yourself and or to others. Either way, there's no problem. So you can, if you can either do the Umrah Mufradah for yourself with the rewards for yourself, or you can do the Umrah Mufradah for yourself and give the rewards to others, whoever you want them to be. Ayatollah Khamenei, however, allows the execution of the Umrah Mufradah multiple times throughout a given lunar month by a single individual for themselves, even though it's a recommended precaution, ihtiyat-e mustahab, to execute it once every lunar month. But that's a recommended precaution. And therefore, if someone who follows Ayatollah Khamenei, they can do two or three or more Umrah Mufradahs for themselves without encountering any problem. Executing the Umrah for others too follows suit. So according to Ayatollah Khamenei, you can execute several times an Umrah Mufradeh within any lunar month for someone else. And you can do it, let's say, for your deceased father, you can execute 5 Umrah Mufradehs for your deceased father, for example. And it's all in a given month. It's okay, according to Ayatollah Khomeini. And when it comes to the rewards, you can distribute the rewards for yourself or to others. Now, those others may be alive, deceased. They may be fallible or infallible. For example, you can give the rewards to the Holy Messenger and the successors to the Holy Messenger. And it's irrespective of whether they've granted you permission to act as a deputy and do and execute an Umrah Mufradeh for them or not. You don't have to get their permission. So you can just execute it for them and give the rewards for them, even if they didn't grant you any permission. So here, according to Ayatollah Khomeini, you can execute the Umrah for others, and you can do it multiple times, and here you're a deputy for them, even though they haven't granted you permission to do so. It's okay. And with the rewards, you can distribute the rewards how you like between yourself or to them in any manner you desire. Now, so on this theme, slide number 6, on this theme and on the subject matter of deputyship, in Arabic, niyaba, here, the execution of an Umrah Mufradeh on behalf of someone else as their deputy, Na'ib, irrespective of whether the other is or the others are alive or deceased, they've given consent or not, or whether they be mentioned specifically, for example, you're doing the Umrah Mufradeh as a deputy for David, or my father, or my primary school teacher. It can be mentioned specifically, or you can do the Umrah Mufradeh for people, be they alive or not, or whether they've given consent or not, either way. But you can do it in general terms, like I'm doing the Umrah Mufradeh for Iranians, or for all the martyrs of Islam. Here, one is allowed to act as a deputy for him or her or them, okay, in relation to the Umrah Mufradeh. But concerning this deputyship, since one may receive a payment in return for acting as a deputy for someone and doing an Umrah Mufradeh for someone, it's possible that you get a payment from them. I mean, you can do it for free, and that's very good. But sometimes some people may get a payment in return. Although it may rarely happen, but it is possible. Assuming someone wants to do an Umrah Mufradeh for Mr. A, and Mr. A is alive, and Mr. A will give them £100 for this person who wants to act as a deputy for Mr. A and wants to go and do the Umrah Mufradeh for Mr. A. If this is to happen, this may affect the deputyship of the others. Assuming there are others also, and you want to do it for free. So let's say you want to do the Umrah Mufradeh for 10 people, Mr. A and 9 other people. With Mr. A, you're going to receive something in return. With those other 9, you are planning to do it for free. Here, there's a problem here, because now you're getting money from Mr. A. You would need Mr. A's permission to perform the Umrah Mufradeh for those 9 as well, because Mr. A is paying you. And since he's paying you, you can't do the Umrah Mufradeh for others for free. You have to get the permission of Mr. A if you want to go ahead with it. So that's a slight difference there once payment enters the equation. Otherwise, if it's all for free, you can do it for as many people as you like. Okay, that was executing the Umre Mufrade for oneself or others. Just one or two, there were only one or two jurisprudential points there which were worthy to mention. Now, accomplishing the Hajj for oneself or for others. Now, as we have said, this Hajj ritual has to be executed once during the duty bound's lifetime, at least once. And that's assuming all the required conditions are met. And these conditions collectively are termed the conditions for being mustati. So conditions such as being of good health, being sufficiently financially able, having free access travel-wise, having open access to Mecca, having a secure access route to Mecca. All these, if they're all there, if they're all collectively present in a given person, that person is called a mustati. He is able now to execute his duty or her duty. Now, assuming one is a first timer. A first timer is one who has never executed either a recommended or an obligatory Hajj tamattu. They've never executed the Hajj tamattu, which, now be it a recommended Hajj tamattu or a obligatory Hajj tamattu. So they've never done the Hajj pilgrimage, which entails Arafat and actions after Arafat. So these people are called first timers, and their Hajj, the Hajj of first timers, if they are mustati and they have all the conditions, their Hajj that will be called Hajjatul Islam. Now the question is, with these first timers who they've never executed the Hajj tamattu before, can they act as a deputy in Hajj, not for Umre Mufrada, in Hajj now, for others? Would they be allowed? Now, if they are not mustati, okay, for example, they're not of sound health, or they're not sufficiently financially capable, or they have other limitations in relation to going to Mecca, they would be allowed to act as a deputy for someone else and do the Hajj for someone else because they're not mustati. However, assuming one is mustati, here there's a difference amongst the jurisprudence. Ayatollah Sistani does permit such a deputyship, i.e. even if one is mustati and has all the necessary conditions to go to Hajj, Ayatollah Sistani does permit such a deputyship, assuming one has certainty they'll be able to carry out one's Hajjatul Islam in the succeeding years. Although usually this certainty does not exist. He has mentioned this in his treatise on Hajj. It's not something which is usually substantiated. This certainty is not usually acquired, because one really doesn't know what's going to happen in one's succeeding years. And the reason he says this is because the obligation of immediately carrying out the Hajj, okay, whilst having the conditions of istita'a, it's a rational obligation. It's not a canonical obligation. With canonical obligations, if the canonical the Sharia obligation is for you to go to Hajj, you have to go there once you're mustati and have all the conditions, you have to go. But if the obligation to immediately go when you have all the conditions is rational in nature, you still have to go. But if you want to do it for someone else, and you know you'll be able to do it for yourself in the succeeding years, it would be allowed to do it for someone else. Whereas most of the jurisprudence, they say, no, you're not allowed to act as a deputy for someone else when you yourself are mustati. Why? Because it says we have the nature of the obligation to go to Hajj is canonical. So you have to go. But Ayatul Sistani believes that the nature of the obligation to go immediately is rational. When it's rational, you can act as a deputy for someone else, even though you are mustati for Hajj, only if you're sure that in succeeding years, for example, next year, the following year, you're going to do it, you will be able to do it yourself. Okay. Whereas Ayatollah Khamenei, however, does not deem such a deputyship as permissible. That is, on being mustati, one must perform the Hajj for oneself before acting as a deputy for others in future years. But the first time, if you are mustati, you have to do it. If you are not mustati, we said, you can act as a deputy for others. Because that the person you are deputizing, they will give you the money, they will give you all the means to go. If you're not a mustati, you can act as a deputy. But if you're mustati, Ayatollah Khamenei, in opposition to what Ayatollah Sistani said, he says you're not allowed to act as a deputy. Because he sees the nature of the obligation to go to Hajj immediately as a canonical obligation, not merely as a rational obligation. Now certain scenarios may arise now. Assuming one had been mustati before, but then lost one's state of being mustati this year. Now these people, they become bound to execute the Hajj this year, albeit via borrowing or any other means, albeit very difficult for them. Once you become mustati, it's on your shoulders to go for Hajj. If all the conditions are there, you have to go. If you miss out on going, then were you to die, you would die as a Jew or a Christian, according to traditions of Ahlul Bayt. You have to go. And here, assuming you were mustati, but didn't go, this duty is established on your neck. And it's as if your soul is that of a Jew or Christian year after year, moment after moment. So this is something very serious. It has a lot of implications here. Because with borrowing, you're not allowed to borrow usually to go for Hajj. But, I mean, there are exceptions and everything, but here, if you were mustati, then you lost your state of being mustati the next year. Even borrowing is a must. However, assuming one was of sound health, but not mustati financially, but then becomes mustati this year in financial terms, but their health condition is simultaneously compromised. What's the duty here? Ayatollah Sistani dictates that they must get a deputy to perform the Hajj. Because they're of poor health, but they're financially able to go this year, when they weren't the previous year. Here, Ayatollah Sistani says they have to get a deputy. But Ayatollah Khomeini says no, this is not obligatory to get a deputy, because the person isn't a full mustati yet. Okay, I mean, these are the general principles. I'm sure there are so many scenarios that can arise. I'll leave that to your discretion. And any questions that you have, please raise them. Okay. Slide number 8. Miscellaneous issues pertaining to monetary affairs. Now, assuming one is in debt, now it may be through house mortgages, student loans, etc., can they go and perform the Hajj with their own money? What if they were gifted money? Now, for the Umrah Mufrada, there's no issue there. But this issue is specific to the Hajj, because for Hajj, for it to qualify as that one in a lifetime duty, that Hajjatul Islam, all the conditions have to be met. And one of them is that being that financial ability. Now here, let's say if you are in debt, can you still go? What if someone gifts you some money for this Hajj pilgrimage? Can you take it? Should you take it? Now here, assuming people have extra money for Hajj, i.e. in addition to the total amount of debt, they do have enough money for the pilgrimage. That will be fine and they're obliged to go. There's no problem there. However, if they were offered money as a non-specified gift, so money was given to them as a present without any stipulations, here they must go only if they were to accept the gift. But accepting the gift isn't mandatory. But if they were to accept the gift, they would have to go. Now, let's say someone is given a gift for the specific purpose for him or her to go and perform the Hajj ritual. It's a gift. Someone says, look, daughter or my son or my friend, this is £3,000 or £4,000. I'm giving you this as a gift to go to Hajj. Here, one must accept it and act accordingly, because now the gift was specified for Hajj. If it wasn't specified for Hajj, you don't have to accept it, but only if you accept it, you would have to go. But if someone gives this for a specific reason, that I'm giving you this money to go for Hajj, then one has to accept and then go. Especially if they haven't done it, they haven't committed their duty once in a lifetime of going and executing the Hajj pilgrimage, they would have to go. So sometimes you may hear stories where some people were offered money to go for Hajj, and then they said, there's no need for me to go to Hajj. Let's spend it on these orphans, for example. And that may sound very good on the outside, but this has spiritual side effects, such as statements, and refusing such money can be difficult. Going to Hajj at least once in your lifetime is a must. Compromising with that is spiritually very detrimental. Okay. Now, concerning the borrowing money for purposes of Hajj, Ayatollah Khomeini dictates that it's not wajib to borrow in the first place, but if one does borrow, they will be deemed mustati and would have to execute the Hajjatul Islam, that obligatory Hajj tamattu, which you have to do once in a lifetime. But they would have to do it if, and only if, the loan is easy to return. If it's difficult and you go ahead with it, that would only be a mustahab Hajj. It wouldn't be that once in a lifetime Hajj, because you weren't mustati. So the loan has to be easy to return. With Ayatollah Sistani, he says it's only permissible if the manner of paying back is so lengthy and minimal, for example, 50 years of small installments, that in such a way that rational people would deem it insignificant and pay no heed to it, as if it's hardly anything. So that's a bit more difficult compared to Ayatollah Khomeini, who said the loan has to be easy to return. But with Ayatollah Sistani, the loan has to be as if it's nothing. Note that, according to him, Ayatollah Sistani, it's not wajib to borrow. But if one does borrow, here, like Ayatollah Khomeini, it's not wajib to borrow, but if one does borrow, then they have to execute the pilgrimage. But that borrowing, with Ayatollah Khomeini, he says the loan has to be easy to return. If it's going to be difficult to return, it won't be that once one duty of a lifetime. It would be a mustahab Hajj pilgrimage. With Oytullah's sister, it's a bit more strict. He says it would have to be such a lengthy and minimum way of returning that it's hardly anything. Okay, but both of them say that if the borrowing goes ahead with these conditions, one would have to go ahead with the pilgrimage. Okay, slide number 9. Now, concerning those who are in debt, but who have the extra money required for executing the Hajj ritual. Now, with these people, assuming the scenario is such that either the time for payment is not for this year, it's for future years, for example, or the time for payment has arrived, but the creditor, the one that you've borrowed the money, is satisfied with one postponing it. Here, one would be deemed as mustati. You're financially able to go. However, Oytullah Sistani does add the stipulation that this is only the case when the debt accords with the aforementioned stipulation. Remember when he said that the manner of paying back has to be so lengthy and minimum that it's as if it's insignificant, it's hardly anything. That stipulation has to be recalled here. Okay. We'll just do one more slide. Slide number 10. Assuming one has the necessary amount of money for carrying out the Hajj pilgrimage this year, but they don't have the necessary health condition, are they allowed to spend the money and exit the state of being a mustati on purpose, when they could have saved that money, because they had the money, but the health was compromised? Can they spend and exit the state of being financially mustati on purpose, or do they have to save it for succeeding years when their health returns? Ayatollah Khomeini dictates obligatory precaution against using such a money, assuming they can execute the pilgrimage in future years. They have to, he says, it's not a fatwa, it's obligatory precaution, so one can refer to another religious authority in this matter. But if you want to stick with him, he goes against the idea of using such a money. You're not allowed. And that's when you're assuming that you can execute the pilgrimage in future years. So you have to keep it. You can't spend it. Your health is going to return the next year or in 2 years. You're going to get better. So that money that you have for Hajj, but you couldn't go because of your health, you have to not touch it according to obligatory precaution. But he also says that supposing the illness was terminal, such that they can never go or never have the health condition to go and do their duty, they would be allowed in this case to spend the money if the duty of Hajj had never been previously established over them. So if the illness is terminal, then you can spend that money. But let's say 5 years before all this, you had the money and the health to go, but you didn't go. Since 5 years ago, the duty of Hajj was upon your neck. So if that's the case, you would still have to make an effort to go somehow. And assuming the illness is of a type that is terminal and you yourself can't go, then you would have to get a deputy to go. Whereas Oytullah Sistani, on this matter, categorically issues a fatwa, not an obligatory precaution. He issues a fatwa against such a use. And so he says that one must immediately get her na'ib if the illness is terminal, and if it's not terminal, one cannot touch the money. So it's similar to Ayatollah Khomeini, but Ayatollah Khomeini doesn't give a fatwa. He says it's obligatory precaution that you can't use it. And if it's a terminal illness, here you would be allowed to spend the money, assuming Hajj was never established. Ayatollah Sistani gives a fatwa in this regard. and he says you're not allowed to use, you have to get a na'ib immediately. If the illness is terminal, and if it's not terminal, you can't touch the money, and when you return health-wise, then you have to go. Now, assuming, therefore, one does use or spend the aforementioned money, the duty of... you've spent the money when you shouldn't have, and your health is going to return in succeeding hajjis. Here, the duty of performing the hajj ritual becomes established over them. It's on their necks now. They're a Jew or a Christian, and they're obliged to execute the ritual in future years, irrespective of whether they are mustati or they are not mustati. Once the duty was there and you missed out on it, it's going to cause a lot of problems. Okay. The next slide is, can excused people act as a deputy for others? This has a lot of different scenarios. Inshallah, we'll go into detail for the next session. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad wa alihi tahirin.